The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Lila and David Sears are a married couple who are not licensed therapists. The following opinions are their own and should not be taken as medical or psychological counseling advice. Relationships today face more challenges than at many times in recent history. Join married couple Lila and David Sears as they navigate the world of relationships in Empathy Ever After.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome into Empathy Ever After. I am David Sears, joined by my amazing, truly talented, and pre-surgical Lila Sears, my wife. Yes. How you doing, honey?
I'm all right. How are you?
Doing well. Welcome in to another episode of Empathy Ever After. Lila and I are trying to get back on a schedule. We're trying to make this better. So we prepared this time.
We did.
We prepared instead of just spitballing everything. That's Kofi offering his two cents. He's a relationship counselor for Orange Cats.
Yes.
So, today, we have a fun topic. It is often talked about in church circles. And in fact, as Lila points out, was even used as an intro question on the Hinge dating app, love languages.
Yes.
So we're about to go down the love language. Is it real? Is it fake? Are there only five? Do you know what to do with your hands? We'll find all of that out right here on this episode of Empathy Ever After. Lila, the floor is yours.
Oh, thank you. So love languages were popularized by the 1992 book by North Carolina Baptist minister, Dr. Gary Chapman, The Five Love Languages. This book defined those five love languages as words of affirmation, quality time, receiving gifts, acts of service, and physical touch.
I'm big on that last one.
Yeah, I know. The premise of Chapman's work is that everyone has one or two primary love languages. And if the partners in a relationship have compatible love languages or can come to a point where each of them satisfies the other's needs regarding their primary love languages, then that relationship will ultimately be more fulfilling and happier.
I can see that theory.
Yeah, that sounds pretty logical.
Yeah.
People certainly have various ways in which they feel best giving and receiving love. So sure, it seems logical. After now 33 years and 20 million copies of this book sold,
yeah.
However, the ideas presented therein have been called into question as insufficient, as unscientific, and as arbitrary as some of the criticisms. Are love languages real? Do they matter? And can they be useful in building satisfying relationships?
I think love languages are real. I'm very much, I express my love through physical touch. I love to make you laugh. I love to give you gifts. I'm more of a gift giver than a gift getter. I love giving gifts. I love getting something that's very thoughtful, make people like, oh, that's something I never thought I needed, or that's so cool, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I try to build you up a lot. I always try to be your cheerleader, which annoys you sometimes.
That's more of words of affirmation.
Yeah. That's a words of affirmation. And I'm a gift giver instead of a gift receiver. What are the other two?
Quality time and acts of service.
I love quality time with you. I'm sad we're not going to have quality time Thursday night because we're recovering from surgery, so we won't get to go laugh at Time Cop.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about going to see Time Cop, and yeah. I'm really sorry about that.
I'll just wait till it comes out on demand, and I get it because I'm a Riff Tracks Patreon, and I sponsored him on Kickstarter. But you know what? We are going to be doing that Thursday night. I'm going to be taking care of you, spending quality time with you.
That's right.
You recover from surgery.
Let's just get this out of the way. I am having a hysterectomy.
Yep.
And
because she's so hysterical, they're taking it out of her.
They're going to wreck my hyster.
Wreck her hyster.
So I am getting that done, and David's going to be a great caregiver as he always is.
Well, I mean, you've only taken care of me now, what, six surgeries since we've been married?
Yeah, I don't know.
So, I mean,
one of my turns.
It's you only get these every few years.
Yeah.
For every
three, I haven't had a surgery in 10 years.
For every three of my surgeries, you get one.
Yeah, apparently.
That's how it's working out.
That's how it's working out. Let's get back to love languages.
Okay.
Okay. So first, let's look at the concept.
Okay.
Okay. Love languages, yeah, they do seem to make sense from a layman's perspective, which we are.
I am a lay and I am a man.
Oh, dear God. If your relationship feels out of sync, if it feels unfulfilling, you know, maybe you love each other, but you're not expressing it in a way that the other partner receives as readily or as appreciatively as you'd hope. Let's say one partner's primary love language is words of affirmation, but the other partner struggles with communicating in a romantic way and is maybe kind of stoic. It's clear, obviously, that this could lead to the first partner feeling unloved and the second partner not knowing why.
And I think pretty much every part of a relationship goes back to communication, though.
Right.
So, I mean, you have to have clear channels, clear talking about what you like and don't like. And I mean, I think in that situation, the stoic partner should have realized by now, depending on how long he or she's been with their partner, that I may need to make myself a little uncomfortable and put something out there emotionally.
Well, you know? maybe that partner, their love language is acts of service. Mm-hmm. And if that partner's taken on like a great deal of responsibility in the household, like goes out of their way to do things like put gas in their partner's car, make their partner's favorite meal. But these things may not resonate with the first partner a way a simple, like, you're my favorite person in the world might.
I get that. But again, that goes back to communication and understanding, trying to understand why your partner's acting the way they're acting.
Well, sure.
You know? And I think, like, this weekend, I worked all weekend running barons and radio shows. I come home, this house is freaking spotless.
Well, I wanted to clean before surgery.
I know, but still, you've done all of that, and I appreciate that, and I told you I appreciate that, and you did it, because you were just like, well, I'm going to do it, because David's away. Now, I help where I can. Like, I got home and put up the last bits of laundry, but I told you, and I was so thankful. You even scooped poop last night.
I did. That's normally David's job, to scoop the litter boxes. But last night I was feeling like I was running out of steam, and I was like, I'm going to get this last thing and then I'm going to stop.
So I was very appreciative of everything you did last night, and I hope I expressed that appreciation well. You were dead tired when I got home.
Yes.
You were a zombie who just about came out and let me in. And then went back to sleep immediately.
Unlatched the screen door and then zonked right back out.
But I think it all boils down to communication. And I think that when you have different types of love languages, you hopefully learn how to communicate those better to each other.
And not just how you're like the second partner in my example, with acts of service, is comfortable expressing love that way. Yeah. But they're not doing it how the first partner needs love expressed.
They do. And all right, I know you love my TV references.
Yes.
So King of the Hill just launched a new season,
which I know you are thoroughly enjoying.
I'm watching one episode a day, being very patient, working my way through it. The last episode I watched, Hank and Peggy had an argument, and Hank was trying to do basically whatever that next door neighbor service is, where you're going to be the handyman.
I don't know.
I forget what that service is called. Anyway, he's doing it for Boomhauer, who he accidentally gave a concussion to. And he realizes that these people not only want a handyman, but they want someone to talk to and to give them advice. And Peggy gets a little jealous that Hank gives advice without emotionally opening himself up to her. So they talk about it, and then they start sharing stories and they connect. So there was a problem. One of the partners expressed it, Peggy. Hank saw the problem and did his best to correct. I know that's simplifying it for a 22-minute TV show, but still, I think we as couples tend to do that where, well, if you don't know the issue, you should. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the big problems. Mm-hmm. It's one of the running gags in sitcoms where the wife is mad, the husband doesn't know why. Well, you should know why, you know?
Right. Well, I think King of the Hill is a good example of a sitcom where you have a successful marriage mm-hmm. that's lasted for decades with two imperfect people.
Yeah.
I think Bob's Burgers is another good example.
God, I love Bob and Linda.
Bob and Linda are a tremendous couple.
I'm such a Linda and you're such a Bob.
I am such a Bob. Yes. I like to cook and kind of be quiet. Just kind of not be over dramatic.
Nope.
And David likes to sing show tunes and
I do.
Dance around.
I do. But I think getting back to the love languages part, that I know we went through some counseling before we got married. I know they did that. One of our first Sunday schools, I think, after we got married and got back from the honeymoon was about the love language.
Yeah. Stuff. They had a whole, at the church where we were going, had a whole like block of Sunday school, for the adult couples on the love languages. And, you know, it was like a marriage class taught by two couples, like you said, the love languages are big in church circles. They're big in Christian circles. And we'll get to why in a little bit. Like all the love languages are valid. Like none of them is more right than another. None of them is better than another. It just is how you are within yourself.
Unique individuals who have different needs. Prioritize different needs. Let me say it that way.
Right. But are there really only five ways humans express love? Are there really only five love languages? What about something else? I think that laughing together is a valid love language, as could be gratitude, or a big one for me would be intellectual stimulation.
Too bad you married me.
Well, no, you and I can have some intellectual time together. You're nerdy. Don't try to.
I am. No, I'm a nerd. Like right now I'm reading three books, one about spiritualism, which is kind of a new age religion tied to Catholicism blend. It's very fascinating. I'm reading Carrion Cross's autobiography and I'm reading Epictetus. I can't remember how to say it properly, but the Roman philosopher that inspired Marcus Aurelius. So I'm trying to be balanced.
Yeah. And all that is intellectual.
It's not intellectual. It's nerd. Talk nerdy to me, baby.
Yes, that's you. And that's me, too, actually. So that works for us.
I will say Lila loves to go on Reddit. She's basically given up on Facebook and Instagram. She'll do the kind of trash TikTok, but she also likes the intellectual TikTok. But she has been on Reddit most recently. That's her big kick. And she's been reading stuff and we've been talking about various articles and responses she's gotten. And like, how would you handle this situation?
Yeah. I think that laughing together is a big one for us. And maybe if you're looking at it from a love language perspective, you could call that quality time, but I think quality time is more about spending those moments together and not necessarily what you're doing. I think that laughing together can be a very brief like interaction. It can be while you're not even together, because you send me memes during the day.
I send you so many memes.
You send the world so many memes.
It's my meme language.
Memes are your love language.
I send you so many things on Instagram. Like, I think you have a backlog of.
I do because I don't ever check the Instagram DMs. Yeah. I just don't know when I've checked them.
I'm gonna start to send them to your Facebook. You have to read them. Now.
I do. But I think if I couldn't laugh with my partner, like, I'd feel completely alone and unsatisfied in my relationship.
Some of the best moments have been when we've just been in bed at the end of the day and I made your belly button with a scar talk.
My poor belly button that's about to have its third scar.
I made her belly button sentient and it was talking to Lara.
This is not going to make sense to anybody else, but we were like making it like a puppet.
It was deliriously tired at the end of the day. And we both laughed so hard because she was her scar and her belly button was given to her by a tiger.
And I said, because I'm a big Monty Python fan, I said, in Africa?
No, Detroit.
And for some reason, my belly button sounded vaguely like Antonio Banderas.
Antonio Banderas.
So I.
Too sexy. Too sexy.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I do random stuff like that and just make her laugh. And sometimes I just do it because I love to touch her. And sometimes it annoys her. And sometimes, like, she's super ticklish. So I have to be very careful because just a light touch, which is supposed to be romantic, can get her start giggling.
Yeah, physical touch would not be one of my love languages primary because that's
your cringe language.
That's a good way to put it. I'm a little bit touch averse. I'm an only child. I just don't love to be touched all the time.
And I'm a big hugger. Like, because of you, I get along so much better with my boss at ATI right now because the first thing she told me is she's not a hugger, and I had to learn how to communicate with her and make her laugh and show friendship and joy and stuff. We get the most awkward high fives because she's not used to high fives because I have to have some type of physical touch. So I give her high fives, and like, I knew if I were to give her a hug, she would cringe and freak out.
It's not always appropriate to hug your boss.
When you get good news, sometimes I just want to give him a hug. But anyway, I think because of dealing with someone like you who is touch averse, I've learned how to interact better with people who are touch averse.
Yeah.
Because not everybody's a big huggy teddy bear like me.
No, we're not. We're very much.
I'm very much a brothers don't shake hand, brothers got a hug type of guy.
Yeah. And I'm very much a we don't have to do that.
Yeah, we
kind
do.
Of person.
Yeah, we do. Come in here. Come here, get that hug.
No, I'm on my mic over here.
You're getting a hug after this.
I probably will.
Probably a kiss too.
Probably.
I love giving her kisses.
Back to love languages.
I was talking about my love
languages. You were talking about your love language for sure. I think putting the framework of just five simple categories onto this infinite experience of human romantic love, it seems limiting and rigid.
I get that.
You know, it's possibly ripe for more rigidity when somebody like takes it to extremes.
That's very true. Like, I think if the only way you show love is through physical touch, that's messed up. Or like you say, the only way you can love me is by having sex with me. That's messed up.
You know?
That sounds like a sociopath.
Right. You don't want to box yourself in. You don't want to limit. Even if you subscribe to the idea of love languages and you have a way that you feel most comfortable expressing or receiving love, or a way that feels best to you, you don't need to limit yourself to that one thing because there's so much more to a relationship than just one element.
I mean, look at us, because this is our best. We know us the best. We are the leading authorities on us. We do multiple things for each other. I'm away from work. I'm away for work so much. You pretty much take care of the house. But when I'm home, I start trying to do laundry, start trying to help out around the house. I handle a lot of the bills. I I cook you dinner when you have your bad migraines. Normally you're in charge of the cooking is your zen time. You put the headphones on and just start cooking and kind of tune out.
Mm-hmm.
And some days I know you have to do that because you've had stressful days and I leave you alone. And right. knowing your partner's needs, like Lila is a decompressor when she comes home. I'm a vomiter. I just vomit my entire day all over her and just yell, scream, kiss, whatever, just go nuts. She is very much, I have to come home and turn off my brain. I need to lie in the bed or start cooking dinner with headphones and just chill. And we experience that with each other. And we learned that it's multifaceted. Like the quality time, we've spent quality time talking. We spent quality time at football games. We spent quality time beating the crap out of each other at Mario Kart. I mean, we have different types of quality time. And I think also, like you said, the laughter, some of our best memories are laughing.
Right.
Like ridiculousness, sheer ridiculousness.
Yeah. Stuff that doesn't make any sense.
It makes no sense. And it's an inside joke to us.
Right.
Saying there are only five ways to love your partner is kind of wrong.
Right.
It is wrong.
Yeah. Is there any of the five love languages that are disposable within a relationship? Without quality time, without acts of service, without gift, without physical touch, without words of affirmation, what defines a relationship as intimate and romantic? None of these things seems optional or extraneous to building a long-term intimate relationship. I mean, even if your primary love language is physical touch, what is a relationship without quality time?
Yeah. I mean, we're coming into the busy part of the year for me, not as busy, but football season, I'm working sometimes 7 days a week and it's really hard to spend quality time. But we find ways to do it. Now, is it as much quality time as we'd like? No, but we make do with what we have. And we learn to do other ways. Thank God. Look, Messenger and text are what Lila and I primarily communicate through because we can walk away or get busy at work, leave a message, and then come back to a reply and some other stuff from it. And I think just staying in contact and keeping there have been days when Lila is like bleep. And I was like, would you like me to bring you a milkshake? Yes.
Yes. 99 times out of 100. The answer is yes. I think that, going back to communication, Another possible love language is just talking.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are big talkers. You're a big talker.
I'm a huge talker.
Your dad is the biggest talker I know. My dad is a
big, loud talker. He caught himself. He's starting to become more self-aware, though.
Oh, that's good.
But he gets so excited. He wants to tell you.
Yeah.
And he sometimes gets louder as he gets more excited.
Yeah.
Which I do too.
You do. And I have actually had to rein you in a little bit with escalating between the two of you because you'll escalate back and forth.
Because we get excited.
Yeah. And then you get too loud. But well,
it's not like we're at a cruise and just annoying and Yankees.
You talking about the women who were at the table next to us the first day of the cruise?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. They were a lot.
We never saw them the rest of the week.
We didn't. And I was very happy about it. I don't know where they were among the thousands of people on that ship, but they were a lot. It was a big girls trip and they were
big girls. All right.
Back to love languages. Let's talk about some of the criticisms of love languages. First off, there is no scientific basis
Who needs science?
For love languages. Dr. Chapman, who's...
But he's a doctor, so he has a doctorate in something.
He has a doctorate in adult education.
So that is adult education? Is that just like college?
No, it can be anything from, you know, helping people get their GED to like postgraduate learning to, I mean, any type of adult learning, but adult education rather than like psychology or counseling or sociology or communication or something one of those things that you
would expect.
Right. And he admittedly based his ideas on his experience in pastoral counseling of Christian couples. Mm-hmm. So there was not, a large study or survey of couples. There was no like controlled testing of concepts. This is all just from his experience. The idea of love languages is also pretty firmly rooted in Chapman's conservative Christian theological perspective. Mm-hmm. And in the book,
Christians believe there's only three types of love. Phileo, which is brotherly, agape, which is godly, and eros, which is passionate. So basically one of the tenets we were taught when I was in Southern Baptist was there's only three types of love, and they all loves fall into one of those three categories.
I was never taught that there were only three types of love.
Southern Baptist.
I wasn't, but I was taught that there are three types of love, but it was never the only thing wasn't put on there. So anyway,
but I get that from his theological perspective.
Right. So in the book, related to that, there are some anecdotes that kind of raise eyebrows. At one point, Chapman relates that he tells a husband that his wife, who wanted him to help with laundry, finds doing laundry as pleasurable as he finds the act of sex.
Wait, say that again.
So wife wants husband to help with laundry. He's like, she feels like one of her love languages is acts of service. Uh-huh. And he's like, what can I do to make you feel loved? And she says, help me with the laundry. Mm-hmm. And when he wanted the response, let's have sex. And so Chapman, instead of saying, well, this is an act of service to meet her need for service, like, you need, instead of saying like, well, yeah, she's tired of doing your laundry, my guy, he says that she finds the act of doing laundry as pleasurable for them as a couple as having sex, which is, Gary, it ain't that deep. It is.
That's what you said.
It is.
So, I mean,
it is
that. No,
that's wild.
That, yeah, I don't. There is no chore I enjoy doing that makes me have the
listen
joy.
To me. I do most of the laundry. I do this cleaning, this uh-huh. big cleaning mission that I did the last 2 days was not pleasurable. I did it because it had to be done.
You were worn out. Speaking of which, how's the back after all that?
It's better today.
Scrubbing?
It's better today.
That's rough.
Yeah.
See, mopping is not good for either one of us because the mops are too tall for her and too short for me.
Yeah, so mopping
we both hurt our backs mopping.
Yeah. I think I mop too hard is another thing. I think probably I get
angry.
I think I get really violent with angry my mopping.
Are you the toxic Avenger wheeling your mop?
Apparently. But yeah, I think this woman is just tired of having to do the whole like gendered division of labor 24/7 and hoped that this man would pick up some slack around the house.
Well, I think so. This was written in 92.
Yeah.
That was still firm in gender roles then.
Sure.
I think couples, the Gen X couples, when the Gen X couples got married into us, the millennials, mm-hmm. well, are you a zennial?
I'm a zennial.
I'm a millennial because I think zennials are 80 or 78 to 80 or something like that. Anyway, I could be a zennial. Anyway,
I think you're a zennial as well, because I think it's like 78 to 82 or 77 to 83 or something like that.
But I think the Gen X couples and the millennial couples tended to have less gender roles because we're having to work more.
Yeah, it takes two incomes. Well, his audience and the people that he had counseled, of course, because remember, this man at this point is 87 years old. Yeah. He's still alive. He's 87. You have to remember that the audience for this were boomers,
yeah,
who had like Silent Generation and Greatest Generation parents. And things were, particularly when they were raised, were very gender divided.
The mom stayed at home, cooked three squares a day.
Right. I mean, there's a, you know, a thing where I think Chapman says, like, you know, my dad didn't do diapers and, you know, dishes and that kind of stuff. But I do that because he says it, that it's because his wife like appreciates that and needs that. And I'm like, well, yeah, but also because like you're a parent.
Yeah.
And it's just part of your job.
So I think that when you have that part of your parent, I mean, our friends with kids, all the dads do as much work with the babies. Like when the moms breastfeed, the dads will get the pumped milk and cook it so the moms don't have to get up 24 hours a day.
Not cook it.
What do you do to it? You boil it, don't you?
No, you don't boil it.
What do you do?
God, no, you don't boil it.
What do you do?
You can just warm it a little, but you don't have to.
Well, anyways, all I know is that my friends who have had kids, the dads have helped. There's
reasons we don't have children. Just
boil it, don't you?
No.
Throw the bottle in the water, let it boil, and feed the baby.
You don't boil it.
Anyway.
Never let David babysit your newborn.
I can change a diaper. I did learn how to do that. So, but I think that we've seen more dads become involved in the raising of their children instead of just passing it off to their mother. I think that's more of a Gen X millennial thing. I think when you have people that understand you can't put all the work on someone,
right,
that gives you an all work and no play aspect, and we all know that makes Jack a dull boy.
Yeah.
So I think it's more balanced at home. I'm not saying it's 50-50.
Like, no,
I'd probably say it's like 60-40, 70-30 here, but I make sure I always do my 30 or 40 so you don't feel overwhelmed.
Yeah. And of course, Chapman's perspective leads him to be focused exclusively on heterosexual marriages. Mm-hmm. So not just people who live together. Well, Southern and Baptists
don't believe gay marriage.
Right. Well, and not also people who just cohabitate.
Yeah.
Or even just people who are dating. You know, it's marriages. His stance on divorce for reasons of incompatibility, or even more serious reasons, is pretty clearly to tough it out in the marriage and do the best you can.
You think you just stick together if it's abuse?
Well, there's one point where this woman is in an abusive, an emotionally abusive relationship, mm-hmm, and he ends up advising her to have sex with her husband twice a week. And to read her Bible and hope that her relationship improves. So I'm not real comfortable with that as somebody who's, you know, super anti abuse and domestic violence.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that sounds like it's a problem with the husband, you know, like, he needs therapy to figure out why he's being emotionally abusive.
And I'm sure that Chapman, he doesn't define it as emotionally abusive, but the things that he describes the husband doing are clear examples of emotional abuse. And, yeah, and so, the advice is for the wife to put out more.
Well, you know, that is good advice. If the wife puts out more, the husbands tend to be happier.
Yeah.
I think they'll just want more. Two won't be enough. It'll have to be three, then four. So
If you give a mouse a cookie,
you give a man a lay.
He's never going to stay that way.
He won't.
Kofi
agrees.
Yes. There are several points in the book that may lead you to think that Chapman has even like a fundamental understanding of relationships in general. There's one point where he tells a husband that he should have been with his wife instead of playing softball when she was giving birth to their child, because she desired her love language of gifts to be satisfied. In this case, the gift was the gift of his physical presence.
If you were ever pregnant, and which is not going to happen now, but if you were ever at that point where you were due any day, I would have taken off work. I would have done everything to be with you to be ready.
Well, this guy went and played softball instead of probably being
church league softball
when his wife was having a baby, having his child, having their baby, and he's not there. Now that you don't need love languages to figure out what the problem is with that situation.
That is a huge red flag.
That is not only a red flag, it's your child.
It's your wife who's going through a traumatic birth. What happens?
Because birth is traumatic.
What happens if the wife has complications during birth? I mean, that dude's an asshole.
I mean, flat out, you deserve neither wife nor child at that point. And I'm a stand on that business.
I will.
Because that's just scum behavior.
That is beyond scum behavior. That is the absolute potato of behavior right there.
But I like potatoes.
Okay. The absolute mushroom of behavior.
Thank you. That's something I don't like. But you know, that it's a lot of stuff like giving men an out or a pass for some kind of behavior like that. It's like, no, it's not about love languages. It's about simple human decency.
Yeah. I mean, I would never want to miss a child's of my own child's birth. Doesn't matter if it'd be the third one. I would want to be there for every kid.
He also played softball when her mother died.
Ooh. So this dude has a big problem. They need couples counseling.
I think they need an attorney is what I think they need. So that's my opinion.
That dude has serious issues.
Does not jive with the Southern Baptist Convention protocol, was Baptist.
So this dude would play softball when his kid is born and when his
mother-in-law died.
Mother was that. Wow. All right. We just went through a very traumatic thing. What would you have done if I was like, honey, I'm going to go watch wrestling instead of chilling with you?
Okay, so you're saying you would have, if you would have gone to a wrestling show instead of
when we got
being
to that,
there,
when we got to that
when weekend. My stepdad died.
Yeah, like because we knew going into that weekend, it was probably very likely.
Yeah.
If I would have been like, you know what, Raw's in Atlanta, I'm going to head to Raw. Or pay-per-view's in Atlanta, I'm going to go to the pay-per-view.
First off, I can't imagine you doing that. So I'm having a really hard time imagining.
I still feel guilty, even though y'all sent me on a lunch run and he passed away while I was on the lunch run, for doing something you told me to do.
I know, but I can't. It's hard for me to come up with a response because I can't imagine you doing that. But I think it would. That could be a deal breaker for me.
Mm.
Like, I think that could have been like a.
I just don't understand that at all, because just coming from my experience, when Steve got to that final month and we knew it was going down, I felt guilty going to work just for 6 hours. I felt guilty anytime I left the house to go get dinner, because I just wanted to be there for you and Jan, my mother-in-law. Just do whatever you wanted. And some of that stuff, like you said, they we didn't have anyone cook for us, so we needed to, I need to run get dinner, or you need me to go, your mom's blood sugar was dropping, so I had to go get apple juice or something, you know. I just don't understand how you could not be a servant to your wife during that difficult time. That, again, that's just me and the way I think of things. But when you're going through absolute hell, you know you're in the final stretch, because it's obvious that if you went to play softball and she died, it's not like she dropped dead. It's like she was on her last legs. So that, yeah, that dude probably should have been divorced.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
That dude didn't need a wife.
He did not.
He did not.
He needed to grow up. He was a man child.
He needed to be single. That's what he needed. But, you know, criticisms of the love languages extend outside those of the underlying work, outside the book. One of the major cons, I guess, of using love languages is when people rely too heavily on them or use them as an excuse for poor behavior. So this is not necessarily on the author. It's on people when they apply it. So sure, like we said, it's a Hinge app prompt. My love language is, and then you respond to that and as part of your profile. But you know, you can certainly box yourself in with that question. There are ways now, of course, dating culture being as toxic as it is, from my understanding these days, you know, if you're honest and you say, well, my love language is gifts. Well, then you're inevitably, especially if you're a woman, you're inevitably going to get some man in your DMs calling you a gold digger.
I ain't saying she a gold digger. She ain't wrestling with no broke.
Thank you for doing the radio edit.
I can't. I'm white. You can't say that word.
You cannot. But then there's, you know, if you're a guy and you put on there, well, my love language is physical touch, then people are going to think, well, it's you just want sex.
You're a nympho. That's all you want. You're a nympho baby instead of a nepo baby.
I don't think men can be nymphos.
I think men can be nymphos.
I think by linguistic definition, a nympho is female. If we just did something weird audio wise, Kofi stepped on the computer.
Yeah.
But like I said, I think linguistically that only applies to women.
Okay, fine. You're a sex addict. Let's say it that way. You're a man who,
which isn't actually a diagnosis in the DSM.
So you're a sex addict if you're a physical touch guy.
Well, somebody might think that of you or get in your DMs and say that to you. Sure, there's certainly people who use the idea of physical touch as a love language to demand more sexual activity from their partners. And there are likely people who use the idea of gifts as their love language to demand more or expensive presents. People can be manipulative anything.
What was the spoiled little prat at the Dursleys?
The
Harry's
cousin. Dudley Dursley. That sounds right.
Maybe. But he would count his presents each year for his birthday. Would always demand at least one more. So, honestly, if someone takes the time out of their day to give me a gift, if it's a pet rock that they painted a peace sign on, that means they thought of me, you know? So I'm going to take that as something that they invested their time, they thought about me. Or if you see a meme, or if they see a like Glenn Sloan, a friend of mine, he knows I love memes. He sends me different memes each day. He barely ever talks in the chat. He just sends memes. That's all he does, is sends memes. And I know that's his way of communicating and connecting with me, because I love my brother Glenn. And I think that if you just expect more from people, like more and more expensive things, that just makes you shallow and pedantic, you know?
I was like, pedantic's word, but shallow.
Not shallow and pedantic. Shallow.
You
and,
got that from Family Guy.
I did get that from Family Guy. Shallow and Oh, what
materialistic.
Is materialistic? Thank you.
You know, those people are abusing the concept of love languages for selfish reasons. You know, that I've even heard the argument that, you know, all men have physical touch as their love language, and it's just a way to guilt their wives into having more sex with them. But I did, while I was researching for this episode, find a survey by HIMSS, the medical company, showed that quality time was the number one love language for men at 31%, followed by physical touch at 29%. So quality time actually beat out.
I want to know what touch. The ages were for those people, because if it is HIMSS, where it's generally more people older,
it's going to be. Well, I don't know. HIMSS seems to have a pretty, you know, wide ranging client base.
It could be, but I'm just saying, the younger you are in a relationship, the more it's about sex. But as you get older, you realize it's more about quality time. The sex is great because it's with someone you truly love and you have an emotional, physical, spiritual connection with. And that's why you enjoy spending quality time. Like, I think one of the sweetest things we've ever seen of love on cinematic screen was Carl and Ellie.
And yes.
Just sitting there holding hands, reading books.
From the Pixar movie Up.
Carl and Ellie from Up. Just sitting there holding hands, reading books, or just putting together their house. Just spending time.
I saw another possible love language of co-creation.
Like a podcast.
Like a podcast, or like Carl and Ellie with their house.
Yeah.
You know, creating something together is a way to communicate that love to each other.
I think that's very accurate, because, I mean, we have fun doing stuff together. We love playing video games with each other. We've spent nights before where we played Mario Kart and I whooped your butt because you can't beat me as Donkey Kong on N64. All other versions, we Switch, you can beat me pretty badly, but I dominate you in N64.
N64, that's true.
So,
but on Wii, I was the queen bee.
You're the queen bee on Switch too. But Lila and I have fun playing games together. I think it's a love language, because we have so much fun talking smack to each other, playing putt-putt.
Oh, yeah.
We have fun going to the arcades and playing video games with each other, as long as your when you get overwhelmed.
Oh, yeah. As long as I'm not overstimulated.
As long as your overstimulation isn't taking it. Because, like, we just have fun doing goofy stuff together. Now, yes, I love sex. Ain't going to deny it. But coming home to Lila and just cuddling in bed, watching MST3K and just talking about each other's day, or when she's reading on Reddit and she says, "So what do you think about," and she tells me something. Those are quality moments to me. And I do understand why quality time would be valued more than sex in older people. Because I think if especially if you're coming from a traditional Christian background where you didn't have sex until marriage, I think sex is a very big part, especially for men and women starting out, just because it's something new. But after you've been together for 20 years, just about like us, we don't really have anything new to do in that aspect, but we have new experiences with each other day and experiencing different things of life with each other.
Right. I think that, you know, quality time is probably, I don't remember what my love languages were when we did quiz.
You were acts of service was your first. And second, I want to say, was the affirmation.
And see, that feels weird to me because I don't feel like words of affirmation would be right for me.
It was just the way the test added up.
Yeah. So, you know, even
acts of service, I remember, was yours. Touch was mine.
Yeah.
Those were our primary love languages.
Yeah. I remember that. Acts of service makes sense for me. But I don't. Words of affirmation doesn't ring true because
I may have misremembered that as your number two.
I mean, it could be
number two. That was my number two, too, because I'm neurotic. I have to be told I'm doing well.
I get a good boy.
I have to be told I'm a good boy. So I think quality time is important. And I think all good relationships, you want to be with each other. You hate being away from each other.
Well, I remember when we came back from our 10th anniversary trip and we'd been together nonstop for like 8 days. I mean, just together with each other, just nonstop. And when I got back to work, I'd been there about 3 or 4 hours and I thought, I miss David.
I felt that way about the cruise. Because we were pretty much with each other, except for the one day y'all went to the private island. We were with each other the entire time. And I got home and went to work on Monday. And I was like, wish I was with Lila. I feel that way when I spend weekends away from you, when I'm working 36 hours over a weekend.
Oh, yeah. I miss you when you're gone over the weekend.
I wish I could be with her. So I think the want for quality time is important, because I think also as you get older, you remember it's morbid, but you realize you have a limited amount of time together.
Yeah.
And you don't know, as much as I drive, semi blows a tire, knocks me in the wall, I die, you know, or
my neurosis is that I think about that a lot.
Well, you have traumatic childhood.
Yeah.
So. But I think as you get older, you value quality time more because you know the time with that person you love is limited.
Yeah. Well, and the experiences that you can have during quality time are
like, I'm sorry, I haven't taken you to see the Dismal Lights yet. We're going to do that next summer.
If you don't know what that is, they're the little, glow worms at Dismal's Canyon in Northwest Alabama. And I really, really want to see these little creatures light up the canyon. They're glow. They don't really light up the canyon, but they glow, and they're only found. It's like a micro habitat. They're only found in this one little canyon in Alabama.
And we're doing that next summer. That's a list of things to do in 2026.
And I think we've been saying that for approximately 15 years.
I only remember talking about it for 4 years. You only shared it with me 4 years ago. So
at least 10.
I'm going to say 4. But I think when you truly enjoy the person you're with, truly enjoy the person you love, you want to spend as much time with them as possible. And it physically pains you sometimes to be away from them.
Yeah.
Like I have a hurt heart sometimes when I feel guilty that I'm working so much and I'm not with you. I don't know if you feel that way because you don't work nearly as crazy hours as I do. Unless you have an overnight at the shelter.
Yeah.
But I feel bad, you know?
Yeah.
And I look for other work so I can spend more time here. Unfortunately, it's not coming, but you're very understanding in that aspect that I'm doing the best for us to make a living, survive. And you're very patient with that. I mean, pretty much since we've been married, I've worked crazy hours.
Yeah. I think at this point I'm just used to it.
Yeah. He's not used to it. He's never going to be. That's Kofi. All right. Well, do you have anything else you want to expound on?
I don't think so. I think that if the love languages are valuable to you, if they make sense to you, if there's something that you find to be helpful in making your relationship better, then I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with that. But I do think that they could be improved upon. Mm.
You should write a book.
I don't think I'm qualified to do that either.
I'm not qualified to do a lot of stuff I do, but I do it anyways. Just saying. No. You don't have to be qualified.
Clearly.
Look who's running the health department.
Look who's running the Department of Health.
So, brainworms. Anyways, This has been Empathy Ever After. I'm David Sears.
I'm Lila Sears.
You can find me on social media on X at David Sears 75, Facebook at David.Sears2, and on Instagram as David Sears 1982.
And I'm on Blue Sky and TikTok as Lila G Cat Mama. And I think that's all the social media that I would like to plug.
What are you on Reddit? Do you want people to know your Reddit name?
No, I do not want anybody to know my Reddit name. I want to lurk there anonymously.
Lurker.
Lurking 9 to 5.
All right. Well, this has been another episode of Empathy Ever After. I'm David Sears. That's Lila Sears. And Lila, hit the catchphrase.
Be kind to yourself and to your partner.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.